Are you interested in the various jobs being done and programs offered in your communities?
Yeah, I want to know about stuff.
Where should you turn to for such information?
The anticipation is killing me!
What better place than straight from the horse's mouth? It is time for your What Do You Think program, presented by WLEW and WHST. Here's your host with today's topic.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another one of our What Do You Think programs here at WLEW and WHST. I don't remember, did I say I'm Nick Johnson? If I didn't, I'm Nick Johnson. I'll be hosting today along with Dina Bruderick, our very one and own. Hello, Dina. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
And we are about to jump on a phone call with State Representative Greg Alexander. He's going to be talking to us about his support for local control when zoning key projects, energy mandates have wide-ranging impacts for rural communities and residents. So let me see if I can actually make this connection here. Hello, good morning, State Representative Alexander. Are you with us?
I am. Can you
okay.
hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can. Can you hear us okay?
Absolutely.
Perfect. So far, so good. I haven't botched it too bad yet then. And so welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today. And I was just kind of telling everyone, it looks like we're going to be talking about your support for local control, for zoning projects, key projects, energy mandates that'll have a wide-ranging impacts for rural communities and residents. And it looks like specifically you were going to be talking about the House Energy, Communications, and Technology. They held a hearing on House Bills 5120 through 23. So far, so good. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. They just adjourned at 10:08.
They just adjourned at 10. Wow, so we are just behind that. So very good. I figured we'd introduce you here and see Dina's here with us too.
Hello.
And
hello.
See if you wanted to, how you wanted to start off with that, if you had some thoughts on that. And
well, first and foremost, I want to say that our government is always best when it's closest to home. That's why I come and I meet at the airports every month so we can talk to the people. Township level is extremely important when it comes to these issues. We've literally seen it tear some of our communities apart within the 98th district and cause a lot of problems. Ultimately, people look to the government to solve their problems, when in fact it's the mandates and the subsidies that create the problems in the first place. Our governor rolled out her fall plans, for which she was planning on putting in the Michigan Public Service Commission to take over the zoning on behalf of the townships because they've been having problems getting their 35% renewable in place, and she's already touted 100% renewable by 2040, which I kind of see as a pretty lofty goal.
Things that maybe sound good on paper but are a little different to put into practice in the practical world.
Well, yeah, it's a campaign slogan.
Yeah.
But realistically, in today's meetings, because we heard this from the governor a month and a half ago, and now it got thrown on last Monday, a week ago today, and they had immediately a hearing on it last week, and it was met with a lot of opposition, as it should, and then they had a meeting again this morning. Now, that meeting, up until about an hour and a half ago, or an hour and a half before the meeting, there was no agenda. It just said simply any matters that may be necessary to be brought before the committee. Therefore, they didn't identify that they'd be speaking to these today until about an hour and a half before the meeting. And once again, there was a lot of opposition to it. And 5120 in particular, they were 8 amendments offered up. So it's definitely not perfect, and they've already recognized that through the testimony. But Rep. Andrews made an amendment, which I really like, and even the Republicans voted for it. His amendment does not allow eminent domain to be a factor in these. So if that's the case, that's kind of a sigh of relief, because we've seen through ITC what's happened in the thumb lately. If there's any opposition to it, they just took it by eminent domain. And that's a huge fear of ours, especially when it rolls out to 100%.
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dina. Oh, I was just going to go ahead.
The eminent control, that's kind of the main concern for the rural areas. Could you elaborate a little bit more on what that is?
That's exactly what I was going to say, too, because if I'm...
Okay, I found eminent domain is something that the government can do to go ahead. And if you don't agree to an easement across your land, your property and stuff, eminent domain is the government takeover of it.
Right.
It's an adverse takeover of your property, and it has happened in the past through different infrastructure needs.
Right.
Because it defines it for the public benefit, and that's something that's challenged quite often in the wordage. And that was another amendment today. Rep. Hill gave an amendment that passed that defines what the public benefit is. Her second amendment would provide $150,000 per unit of government, whether it be a township or a county, for legal fees, et cetera, to, you know, if there was a fight throughout the process.
Right, and that's...
It still provides...
Sorry, that's just what I was going to say. I was glad Dina asked that because that's what my understanding, too, in a simplifying version of eminent domain means basically, if it comes down to it, government can say, well, we need this land, so.
Tough, yeah.
Right,
like
right.
The land grab aspect of these bills.
It's only been within 10 years they've used it in our district.
Yeah, so even a recent example, it's not like it's just fairy tale possibilities.
Right. So Rep. Andrews' amendment does not allow for that to happen in this case.
Was that supported?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Representative Aragona tried for an amendment to provide for funding for police, ambulance, and fire in these local units where they are sited. That failed. Rep. Wenzel tried an amendment to give the township the final say. That failed.
Do you know what?
Rep. Altman, what?
I was going to say, do you know why? I mean, that seems like kind of simple things to support across the aisle, you know. Seems like simple things. Why did they fail? Do you have any clue as to why some would be opposed to that?
Yeah, bipartisanship is a nice term, but
yeah,
we haven't seen it this year.
Okay, fair enough.
Rep. Altman tried for a couple of amendments. One was to include local contractors in the project agreements, and a second one for prevailing wage adjustments. Those both failed as well. Representative Preston tried an amendment requiring agreements between the local governments, the MPSC, and the developer. That one also failed.
Well,
there were three amendments put through by the Democrats that passed. Five amendments proposed by Republicans all shut down.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it seems like, again, these amendments, you know, still allowing a pathway for what they want to get done, but amendments that would be in place to help protect some of the eminent domain type of actions that could be taken. So it seems like even with those amendments, there was still a lot of leeway left on the table for ultimately, if it wasn't about other things, for everybody to be satisfied enough with. So we got a little list of different things here, like regarding support for local control. In the press release that you had put out, you emphasized your support for the local control and zoning key projects, you know. How do you see the proposed bills like HB's 5120, what we're talking about through 23, impacting this local control? I mean, you kind of touched on that already, especially in rural communities. if it continues to go through and without any of these amendments for protections, I mean, what are the fears there? I think, again, we've touched on it, but is there anything else you can elaborate on what people should be aware of?
Well, ultimately, there's a power struggle between the administration right now and all the locals, and it's just, this is kind of opening up Pandora's box. We saw with Proposal 3 that it went far beyond Roe v. Wade. We saw with Proposal 2 it went far beyond election integrity. You know, it makes us nervous because there's a lot of local control issues that have been discussed even before this, whether it be aggregate mining or other things that the commissions that were appointed by the government. MPSC is a big one, but another one I can touch base on briefly is the NRC, Natural Resource Commission. They regulate our hunting and that kind of thing. And we've seen, you know, our four counties in District 98 all have a huge deer problem. I've been receiving, you know, tons of phone calls for deer damage and crops and things of this nature. And obviously, in that regard, MPSC has failed in our area. It may be effective in other parts of the state, but you can't make a law across the board that affects everyone the same.
Yeah.
As a drain commissioner, I recognize the Clean Water Act of 1972 was effective and it worked, but it doesn't affect Michigan the same as it does Texas, and it doesn't affect Florida the same as it does Alaska.
Yeah, sure. So right. Different areas.
Local control is always best because we know what fits the 98th district, Michigan's undiscovered peninsula, I call it. Because we have a commission that NRCS, we also have a MIHI, internet, Wi-Fi commission that is touting 100 gigs, you know, everywhere in the state of Michigan. Well, I haven't seen over 25 or 35 anywhere in the thumb of Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
That's considered unserved.
Yeah.
So do we really want another public commission to be ruling from Lansing over the issues that we're having in the thumb?
Yeah, well,
or the UP, for that matter.
It kind of seems like a no-brainer. I mean, one way it strikes my mind is, you know, if you're doing a job and someone wants to come in and tell you how you should do the job, but they've never done the job, they're not familiar with it, but they think they can tell you how to do it, it kind of seems almost akin or analogous to that, where it's like, well, why wouldn't you want the people who are living with something every day in the area that they're in to be the ones making the final decisions on what's going to affect those communities?
It becomes totally counterintuitive to what our needs are. I don't tell farmers how to grow sugar beets.
Right, mm-hmm.
They know better than me.
Right, yeah. And this is just a macrocosm of that, you know. And I think it's like you said, it's one of the things, once certain doors get open, especially in government entities, they never get closed again. They just typically get pushed further and further open.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a common problem.
The talk about, like how you were talking about, there's things in these bills that weren't even mentioned that they were going to be talking about and things like that. And it just seems like, I don't know, it seems like that happens a lot of times with different bills that come on. It's like, oh, wait a minute, this was in here and this was in here and this was in here as well that people don't know about because of the way it's presented, you know, almost
propagandistic
the way something is presented. And as they say, the devil can be in the details. And sometimes by the time you learn the details, it can be too late.
And one thing we always have to be careful of here in Lansing is they always seem to tie bar. One goes with the other and another. There are certain bills. I'm on these electric energy communications and technology bills. I'm going to vote no on all of them. It's just not even a question. They could quite possibly get rammed up our tailpipe regardless. However, there was some other bills recently that I had to vote no on because they were tie barred to something that was terrible.
Yeah, right.
You could almost stomach one or two of the bills, but it's tie barred to bill number 3. And it's a sneaky way of getting in the back door of coercing the electorate to believe you're doing something wrong.
Right, right.
Well, you know, I've been called out several times on different issues where my vote doesn't necessarily match, you know, my moral character. It's been pretty easy to press the no button a lot, I'll just say that.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, well, that's a thing. That's got to be, and I mean, I know to some extent that's the way it works, but that's got to be, just as an aside, a frustrating thing. I've often thought about that is, you know, it's sometimes when you get just a simple, this representative voted yes on this and this representative voted no on this, it's like, okay, well, and then the bill, like we said, is presented a certain way, but it's like there may be more reasons why a vote was cast other than just this bill, the way it's presented. Like you said, often things are in bills that are not pretty, that people don't know about.
Right.
You know, and so that's got to be a frustrating process.
One of the things that always rings true in my mind, and I think, because I'm an infrastructure guy, I was a drain commissioner, right, for 12 years. And infrastructure is the government's responsibility. We hear the catchphrase, you know, fix the damn roads. But in reality, the local road funding was cut in half, and it's directed towards certain districts, and it doesn't give virtually anything to the thumb, per se. And it's frustrating because you hear the soundbite on TV and all that, and, you know, knowing the devil's in the details and looking at the numbers where they ring true. No, it's not right. State road commissioner from Huron County, John Hunt, always, I love this comment he made. There's no such thing as a Republican road or a Democrat drain. They're here for everybody to use. And I'm an infrastructure guy, so I get it.
True.
I think that's our responsibility. We should be working on that. Everybody can use that and not these pet projects and, you know, favored battery plants and things of that nature, special issues that have been rolled into the budget that it's pretty frustrating to see that all come down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like on the topic of like this whole renewable part of me, energy goals and all this, like how would you say, how do you envision finding a balance between achieving, you know, the renewable energy goals that people have and at the same time trying to address the valid concerns of, you know, local communities, residents, agricultural interest, as mentioned in the press release?
It's, you know, they always set the bar high. And obviously, I you hear this term of 100% renewable by 2040, you just know that's not going to happen. It's not even realistic.
Yeah.
So then they tune it back and they cut it down to make it sound more reasonable, but it's still a stretch.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, if they roll things like the shutdown of Line 5 and some of these other key factors, their agenda, into it, it might force us into, you know, doing some different things. But I've heard it said that, you know, DTE wants this and consumers want that. Well, no, they really don't want it. They're forced by previous legislation. They've been given a mandate. So they're backed up in a corner.
Right. It's, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, sometimes things get forced on you. So it's not like, you know.
Right.
It's exactly like you said. You get put between a rock, not even a rock and a hard place. You're not a rock and a hard place. You might still have a choice. But mandates, it's you've taken the option out of it.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, forced into it.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the legislation encourages public participation and input during the zoning decision-making process for energy facilities, you know, especially in understanding the community's preferences and their concerns related to land use and development?
I don't think it really promotes it. It will enhance it. It's been pretty negative so far. And if we're looking at, you know, the percentage you're saying, it's going to get three times worse. My fear is it's going to be bad.
Yeah,
I can say that.
But, well, and with some of the things we've talked about, I don't think that's an illogical fear to have, you know?
I'm thinking, because right now the caucus on the other side of the aisle is pretty fractured. I can pretty faithfully say that most ours are a no, as myself.
Yeah.
And if you could get to, you know, a few of the Democrats, and tell them how important it is that, you know, we keep the control local, we might be able to make a difference.
Right. And you were saying, as far as on the other side of the political aisle, it's a little fractured, indicating you mean there's, even on that side, there's people that have reservations about this as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's not like it's just a political agenda or just spousing ideological lines. You've got it, like you said, even on the other side of the political aisle, there are concerns that you share between both sides.
Right. And it's going to have to be, you know, some extra phone calls from the public and stakeholders to offset the directive that's put forth by the administration.
Right. So now, if it's something that has been a concern for people, now's the time to act by making the phone calls and making the voices heard, not later then, yeah?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, because I think it's...
And you can go right to House.gov and see, you know, who all's on the Energy and Communications and Technology Committee, who all some of your big key players are, the sponsors of the bills themselves, and those are the people I think it would be wise to reach out to.
Right, and share concerns and tell them, you know, if you're not happy about it, let them know, yeah. Because it can be easy to think, well, one call or one vote or one this doesn't matter. But if everyone does that, then something important might get missed.
Well, remember, you know, one call, one vote really does make a matter right now, because the odds right now in the House are 56 to 54.
Ooh. Yeah,
if this is going to happen, they know they've got to do it before November 7th, because there are two Democrats right now that are running for city administrator positions. And they could quite possibly lose the majority
right.
In a couple of short weeks.
Okay.
So things are going to move fast and hard. And if we could somehow put the brakes on a little bit, there's a good possibility it won't move.
Yeah, like you said, that's a good point, too, with the election coming up and things like that. And the situation is what it is. The push is going to be extra hard, so now is not the time to have any apathetic feelings about what difference does it make. It does make a difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My biggest concern is, like, the way that they are sneaking all of these in. Like you said today, like, you didn't even know it was on the agenda, and, you know, they're kind of just, like, pushing them through so fast, and there are so many questions. And, I mean, this is ultimately a huge deal. The local control and the zoning, I mean, it's like a land grab, basically, for these renewable energy, like the solar energy. When the fields are done, what is the lifespan of the solar energy fields?
Not long enough. I don't know exactly right. What that is. But
yeah,
realistically speaking, it's less than a lifetime.
Right. And then when the solar fields are done, what happens with all those material and the radioactive whatever? I mean, it's just going to be sitting there in these fields. And then the adjoining fields from these solar fields, what's going to happen with that land? I mean, there's just so many questions. And I feel like they're not looking forward enough to, you know, the potential outcome of this. It's just
right. In my mind, I think it would be best if the administration was so set on getting this done, then realistically, I think we should lead by example and put them on the roof of every government-owned building.
Huh.
Put them on the hundreds of thousands of acres that the DNR controls.
The old money where your mouth is type of, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Which that is, that's a saying for a reason, you know. I mean, if you believe in something, then actions should help to demonstrate that you truly do.
Yeah,
put your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and farmers understand the concept of investment versus reward.
Oh, yeah.
If we can fix the infrastructure of the area reasonably, then the next question is, how quick can you get it done? But, you know, these things are a far reach out beyond from, you know, Detroit and Lansing bureaucrats and non-elected officials that are not held responsible by the people. So, you know, we've got to focus on, you know, the real task at hand here.
Yeah, and now's the time. Now's the time.
Yep.
Do you happen to know, like, does this include the battery storage facilities that they're looking into too?
These particular ones do not.
Okay.
These ones do not. But a lot of that funding was tied up because it didn't get immediate effect, which means we'll have to go sine-die. Sine-die is a situation where they adjourn the session for the year, and then a 90-day shot clock takes effect. And after that 90 days, the laws will take effect. And there's a few of them out there that's waiting. Gun control is one of them. And the election, February election, is another one. And the $2 billion in funding for battery plants was another one that did not get immediate effect through the Senate. So therefore, they can't get their hands on that money until 90 days after we adjourn for the season.
So the 90-day shot clock, if nothing happens during that, that becomes the law by default? Did I understand that right, or am I misunderstanding that?
No, it can't start. The 90-day shot clock can't start until after we adjourn for the season.
But
I'm thinking they're going to adjourn for the season the first week in November.
Mm. Right, and that's what I mean. But once that starts, if the time runs out and nothing is done, then it just by default takes place.
Comes 90 days after. If we don't adjourn until Christmas, then it comes, you know, in March.
Right. But whenever you adjourn, that's when it starts.
Correct.
I gotcha. Okay.
We are scheduled for session after that, but they will cancel that and pass a resolution to go sine-die. That's the only way. The November 1st deadline or time frame is the only way that they can get the February primary, presidential primary, to take effect.
Okay. If they adjourn on November
1st. If they don't, it'll be right later, like it has been.
Okay, something that intrigued me in House Bill number 5123 was about the limitation on local authority regarding the control of oil or gas well operations, the drilling completion related permits to that. Now, is that still on the table?
It is. That never got amended today.
Okay.
I'm looking for it right now. 5123, fine bill as introduced. There has been no substitutes to it, but it is tie-barred with 5122.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, it says
I'm looking at an analysis of it right now, and it in opposition. Okay. So arguments in support of this, 5123, is local ordinances failed referenda have stopped too many renewable energy projects. It's a necessary measure to continue meeting renewable energy goals. Opposition. These bills remove local resident approval for mass projects that would be located in their communities. Small wind and solar projects, less than 50 milliwatt for solar and less than 100 milliwatt for wind, are not covered under this. Why are we removing local decision-making for the largest, most disruptive projects? And these are just some of the, I'm reading over the bill analysis.
Okay.
So, let me see, I'm in 5123. Where's the oil? You were mentioning property considered best. Yeah, these are kind of deep.
Yeah, I like I said before the interview, I was trying to, the way that it's like the language that they use is so like the typical man has absolutely no idea. I was trying to read it and I had to summarize it. What my summary says is that the bill addresses natural resource extraction, stating that ordinances should not prevent the extraction of valuable natural resources unless various serious consequences are anticipated. So that's
right.
That's kind of what my question was, like, what mechanisms or guidelines are proposed to determine the very serious consequences related to the natural resource extractions? Like,
right.
And how is
but
this building?
Some of the requirements and some of the setbacks are not even, I mean, it's crazy. Like the solar setback is 150 feet from the nearest outer wall of an occupied building. You can start that close to a house, 50 feet from the nearest edge of a public road right away. Well, you know, a car could hit that.
Right.
If it just went off the road in a snowstorm.
Right.
It's not based on sound science. It's... You know, like a lot of stuff lately, it's an emotion. They're trying to just get to us, I think. You know, for a wind facility, 2.1 times the maximum blade tip height to the nearest outer wall of an occupied building. Well, you know, these things are 400 meters tall, so that means you can put one on 1,200 feet from a house? That's
not
crazy.
Real wide berths. So to speak,
right.
Of, you know.
Also, they're so ugly. No, they're so ugly. But, like, I feel like
to us, but it looks great from Monroe County, you know, where they're writing this stuff up.
Yeah.
Representative Green, Representative Beerline, Representative, there's one other in there, Jay DeBoyer, and myself have all written and expressed invitation to the bill sponsor and invited him up into the thumb where we can show him, you know, what we're dealing with. You know, I'd like to get, you know, if he takes us up on that offer, we'll have a town hall where our residents can come see him. But we have offered him, he should be responding to us within the week to, you know, either accept or deny an invitation to come up and look at this. And I would propose that we show him the beautiful plant that they have in Greenwood Township. I would propose to show him the ITC where they took the property with eminent domain. And there are no coincidences in politics. I think this is a lot of the stuff was pre-planned ahead of time, you know, and it's unfortunately at a breaking point, you know.
Do you think this kind of stuff is, because as we're talking about it, you know, and you're explaining it, a lot of this just seems like common sense things to be concerned about. And like you said, and even across the aisle, obviously, people that don't share the same necessarily political ideas that you do still have the same concerns on this particular issue you have. So why the push so hard? Do you think at some point it becomes more about, just the ideology of a certain set of beliefs that pushes these things rather than what's practical, what makes sense in the real world, so to speak?
Well, a lot of it is tied bar to that, you know, Green New Deal ideology.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of, you're right, right.
Yep.
The
elephant in the room is the Green New Deal.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you know, you get a kind of the problem with ideology, no matter where it stems from, is that you accept a certain core set of beliefs, and anything that disagrees with the ideology, you don't even want to think about. You want to pretend like it's not there because it kind of creates a cognitive dissonance for what you've decided your ideological filter should be.
Right.
Yeah. Like this.
We look at these windmills and the solar farms and all that, and if it made financial sense, they would have been built private dollars by private investors, private companies, without government subsidies and, you know.
Right, financially. Financially
right,
speaking,
yeah.
If the money is there to be had, private companies aren't going to wait for the government,
right.
You know, to step in. If the money's there to be had, I mean, that's why you have a private company, is to try to, you know, make money. So,
yeah.
Kind of.
Without, you know, and they don't. There's no free money. These subsidies come from us, the taxpayers.
Yeah.
And it becomes a shift in, you know, I pay federal tax dollars, and these subsidies are coming from our tax dollars. You know, and it's frustrating to think that in most cases, we'd be better off to plant corn. And what gets lost in the Green New Deal is they talk about, you know, we call them tree huggers or whatever, but every ocean emits carbon dioxide. It's a natural occurring process. Every green plant uses it in the photosynthesis process to create oxygen. There's a value to a cornfield.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it might not, you know, our trees produce oxygen while they got leaves on, right, from spring till fall. But there's a value to the crops that feed us, and they produce the oxygen at the same time. But common sense doesn't necessarily prevail when you're getting an agenda pushed down your throat.
Right, and that, yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking. At some point, it crosses over into the realm of ideology and agenda, and nothing good ever really comes from that.
Right, and we got to base things on sound science. We know that there's heat loading even around these solar panels. Nobody talks about it, but they create heat when they're operational.
Which is like the whole point.
If you take, yeah. Oh yeah, they talk about global warming and all
right.
that, and this is supposed to, it's not going to counteract it because it's going to increase the temperature, the ground temperature by 4 or more degrees right around these solar panels.
Huh.
And nobody ever talks about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which again, that sounds like common sense.
It's called solar loading. It's common in every, you know, solar farm. Definitely warmer around those things.
Yeah, I would have never really thought about that, but when you say it, then it's like, yeah, I guess that does make sense. Of course they would have to. Of course that would be
That's why snow doesn't load up on them.
Right. you know, it's laughable because it's so obvious once you actually say it, you know, but something that you might not think of, and then it's like, oh, yeah, that's kind of an obvious marker.
Granddad always said, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, there's certain reasons why some sayings stick around forever because they have merit, and that's one that I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. If it sounds too good to be true, it definitely probably is. Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you had it in mind that you really wanted to, that we can before we let you go and get back to business?
Well, I think we talked about, you know, the main issue at hand at this point at great length.
Yeah, right.
And of course, you can always catch me every month. I come to Bad Axe Airport on the last Friday of the month at 9 o'clock, and 11 o'clock in Sandusky Airport, and last Monday of the month in Marlette. Like I talked about, government being best closest to home, you can access me and talk to me and my staff every month. I want to maintain that consistency. I appreciate you guys when you advertise it and all that. So if there's other issues, absolutely, you can reach out to the office at greg.alexander@house.mi.gov, or call the office 517-373-1791. That's 517-373-1791.
Perfect.
Yes, absolutely.
Any issues you have, if you have any more questions, reach out to me. I'm a recovering dairy farmer, so I've got my phone's on 24/7.
One of those old habits hard to break.
Right.
Absolutely.
And
so
the airport, I highly recommend, if you have a concern or question, to go to the airport and just meet with Greg Alexander, because I learned so much from the community and what people bring up individually and their concerns and their townships and their counties. And it's just, I mean, every meeting is specific to their county, but the individual township, you never really realize kind of what they're going through until you go there and you hear all these concerns. And that was the last Friday in Huron County at the Bad Axe Airport at 9 a.m. the Sandusky Airport at 11 a.m. And then Marlette is the last Monday. Was that right?
Yes, yep. The last Monday of the month.
Yep, the last Monday.
I chose those specific places. All three of the airports have wonderful meeting locations. They're beautiful facilities, I think pretty much completely underutilized. And that way, if I'm consistent, you know, and not that I would have liked to have, like, coffee hours at a restaurant, but how can you do one restaurant and not the other? And a lot of them are closed on Mondays now, mm-hmm. since COVID. Mm-hmm. So I feel that's just a good, solid way to keep a consistent presence.
Yep. I appreciate you for doing that. Not only from, like, the news aspect and the news that I gather from them, but just I can tell that even the people that bring up concerns, they feel better when they leave because they know that they were heard and they were able to express their concerns. And, I mean, you actually listen to them and you actually get stuff done. I think it's absolutely amazing. So thank you for doing that at the airport, and thank you for coming on this program and just the way that you are involved in the community and the way that you want, like, us to understand, I think is absolutely amazing. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you very much. And I hope you have a good rest of your day. Try not to let that phone give you too much problems, huh?
Will do, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, no, thank you for coming on again, Representative Alexander. Appreciate it.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this What Do You Think edition.
Yeah, now I know stuff.
And be sure to keep your ears tuned closely to AM 1340 and 94.1 FM for our next What Do You Think program.